evening and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. And if you go to that website and find that it's not working, it's because we are working on it right now and hope to have it up and running and beautiful and perfect very, very soon. So give us a week or so and we should have it up for you. Tonight I have Clara Grace Walker on the show. And she is coming to us, hold on for a second, just have a little blip on the screen. She is a best-selling romantic suspense author. She writes about fictional worlds populated with characters that are living out soap opera-style lives. You can expect sex, murder, and more than a little backstabbing inside the pages of her books. Her debut series, Desire Never Dies, is comprised of three books, which are Gratification, Gossip, and Redemption, all of which have made their mark on Amazon's bestseller list. People and circumstances are rarely what they seem in those stories, and if you getting the truth can be a dangerous, thrilling ride. So hop on board and hang on by your fingertips as you read away to your happily ever after. And she is immersed now in the romance and danger and intrigue of her upcoming four-book series, which is called Sex and Secrets. And the first book in the series, Exploits, was released in July. And you can learn more on her website, which is claragracewalker.com. And please help me welcome her to the show. Welcome, Clara.
Hi, Tabitha. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad we got you on.
Excellent.
So what part of the country are you in?
I am in Michigan.
Michigan. Are you getting all this horrible weather that everybody else is getting, or are you guys?
No, actually, I mean, we had some rain here and there, but basically I feel like we're in the bubble, you know?
Oh, that's good.
we've had
good to be
like
in the bubble.
Today was beautiful. Spent the day at the pool writing. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, you are in the bubble because we've been getting rain down south for days and days and days. So good. I'm glad you got some writing time because that just makes it so much better for your readers. So there we go.
Yes. Had a very productive day, which was always nice. So,
well, welcome to the show. And, you know, this is definitely a show about romance and romance authors. And we have a little bit of, we have erotica come on every now and then, but mostly we just talk about the happily ever after is very important on the show. So and I love that even in your bio, you mentioned that because it is, it's what makes romance romance. To a lot of people, it's, you know, I mean, it's a must in romance, but what is it about the happily ever after that makes reading a romance so perfect?
I think it's just the emotional satisfaction, the optimism that's so inherent in believing in, you know, finding true love and, you know, the commitment that's there. I mean, and I'm real optimist, so, you know, a happy ending is like an absolute must for me. You know, the glass is half full. Hope is there, and, you know, I just think that it's all those positive aspects that bring out the best in people.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's kind of like we need that escape from the normal, everyday drudge through the mud. Nothing's positive. The whole world, you turn on the news, it's so negative, you know. There's nothing better than an escape. By grabbing your book or grabbing your reader and knowing what's going to be at the end of that book, that at least you're not going to be disappointed with that.
That is so true. Yeah. You know, no matter what, no matter how many travails the author takes you through, at the end of it, it's all going to be worth it.
That's right. I did a panel discussion with some authors from different genres recently, and there was paranormal, there was fantasy, there was sci-fi, I can't remember what else was involved, but anyway, we were all discussing why our genre was the best, And that was what I came up with. I said, well, because we know we're going to like the ending, you know, it's not going to leave us mad or confused or wondering. And I also added that I think that there should be some kind of study that I think that romance readers are like the happiest people on the planet, the happiest, most well-adjusted, most empathetic people, because of what we read and the endorphins that it produces. And they started laughing at me.
I think you know, those are the people who believe in hope and believe in positivity. And, you know, so I don't know, as corny as it is, I would agree with you. Definitely.
Thank you. See, all of these interviews support my theory, and I'm going to get some kind of funding someday to research.
There you go.
Cheesy.
And then that will be part of a real life happily ever after.
That's right. And then it'll boost romance book sales even more across the world. So there we have it, people. We rule the world.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit how you how did you get into writing? What was your journey like? Were you a late writer? Were you an early writer? You know, how did you get there?
Definitely early. I really have to credit my fourth grade teacher. She would read to us every day. And, you know, she would encourage us to write, and she sent me off in fourth grade to a young authors conference, and I think it was really like, oh, so that's who I am. I'm an author, you know. But it was very, a very major part of my self-identification from it. And, of course, I always loved to read, so it just seemed natural to me that I would, you know, in turn tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So, you know,
she made you into the storyteller that you are.
Yeah, but it just seemed like, well, of course, it's just like something I seem born to do. So, definitely early, definitely just an ingrained part of my personality to tell stories and, you know, hopefully entertain people.
So you were a big reader as well growing up?
Oh, yeah. My mother always thought I was an easy child because I was always stuck with my nose in a book somewhere. And, of course, if she had bothered to, you know, pay attention to what I was reading, she might have been a little more concerned.
Isn't that always the way? Yeah. She was just happy you were leaving her alone.
Yeah, I would just read anything, you know. I mean, I think I was reading Rosemary Rogers at 13, for God's sake.
Wow.
She just had no clue. Oh, she's reading. She's fine.
It's funny that a lot of romance writers' first romance books were some that they took from mom's shelf or grandma's shelf or, you know, something. Like, I was reading those little Harlequin paperbacks, you know, the ones you got in the mail, that my mom got in the mail once a week or whatever. I was reading those at 12 or whatever, and it just cracks me up because the parents are usually completely oblivious to the fact that they're reading these things.
Oh, no, it's so true, yes. But, you know, whatever books I would find, I would just simply read them. And reading is just like, oh, that's good. I have my child is reading. She's not getting into trouble. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah, I feel that way too, except my daughter she's not a big reader. She does, like, she enjoys reading manga. But then I have to go look over her shoulder and go, where are the clothes that belong on that girl? And she's like, oh, you know. And I know who she is, and I know her personality, and she probably doesn't even see that because she's just too busy in this. She's in the story, and she's not even seeing that. But it freaks me out as a mom going, what are you looking at? You know, but she enjoys it. So I, as long as the content isn't bad, you know, I guess the drawing's got to, whatever.
Yeah. I never got really too much into comic books or graphic novels or anything like that. So I guess I always enjoyed, you know, the way that authors could use their words to bring about that visual for me. So
yeah, it's kind of magic. And it's, I mean, if you think about it.
It is, and it's really a very different thing to read the words and be able to picture your own picture it your own way in your mind as opposed to looking at someone else's rendition of it. It's funny because I actually am a huge art lover and I love looking at paintings and I love looking at people's renditions, but I find it just very different than actually immersing myself in a book and bringing my own visualization to something.
Well, I think that I agree with you on that. And it's kind of like, you know, when people talk about the book was better than the movie and everything else, because the movie is how that director or that producer has imagined that being and, you know, has imagined the words in that book and has made them come to life on the screen. And you may completely, you know, imagine it completely different. Your interpretation of it was totally different when you read it.
Yeah,
because you had your own visceral, you know, and emotional responses to things that maybe they interpreted that totally differently. And I can think of lots of films like that. I can think of some that they did well, but I know I agree with that completely. And that's why I said it's kind of magic, because words on paper can make you make this whole picture in your mind play out. And it's really cool. It's a neat thing.
Yes. And it's a very active thing, as opposed to like watching a movie or looking at a painting or a piece of art is more passive. You're taking it in, but when you're reading, it's actually a much more active experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. What can you think of a movie and a book to movie that just blew it for you?
Well, kind of yes and no. now I was I guess first of all I was a huge Tolkien fan, you know, and mm-hmm. I still am, but you know, from a very young age, and I can remember when I was younger, seeing the animated, you know, movie that they had tried to piece together of Lord of the Rings,
right.
And they tried to basically move it all three books into the one animated movie, and I remember just being so disappointed, like, oh my gosh, this is just not it. And then, on the other hand, then along comes, you know, Peter Jackson, and he's got the three separate movies, and then that was just mind-blowing. That was like, yes, exactly. That's what it was supposed to be. Not
awesome.
Not this other thing, but this.
Yes. No, I've seen movies like that too, that you just get so disappointed, and then somebody comes and remakes them, and it's like, yes. And good. That's good that they kept the flavor, you know. You think how many kids were turned on to Tolkien by watching those movies and actually went and read the books. So you hope that they got that same feeling when they started reading it, that it was a lot like, you know, you don't want them to be
right.
Like, this is nothing like the movie. Maybe get more out of it, but still, it goes both ways with the movies. I was a young adult librarian, so, of course, it was during the Twilight phase. And, that the kids came in, you know, it was right when the first movie was about to come out, and they were like, what do you think if they casted this person, you know? And of course I'd read them too. So I was like, I don't know. I'm not going to make any till I see it. Cause I'm looking at them going, and you know, but once it was weird, cause once I watched it, I was kind of like, okay, I accept that. You know, I accept it. And now every time, then I went and read the fourth book that came out after that. And that was who I pictured in my mind. And I was like, in a way, part of me was going, damn it. I didn't want him to be the Edward that I was thinking of.
Okay.
But yeah, it can do both. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of had that a little bit with the first Hunger Games, because I read those books, and I have to say I actually devoured those books.
Yes.
I think I read all three of them in like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the first movie came out, and I love the movies, and I own all of them on Blu-ray, but I think that first movie, it was a little jarring at first because, and I don't mean this that it wasn't well done. It was well done, but it was so different than how I had pictured it in my mind. It was like,
right.
Oh, wait.
Right.
It took me a few minutes to kind of adjust to, well, okay, so how I pictured it is a little different than how it's being done, but I still enjoyed it.
I just remember when that one was coming out that I was thinking to myself, how in the heck are they going to be able to put this on the screen? It is so crazy. You know, the whole thought of the whole book was so crazy. But, you know, after I watched it, I was kind of like, I was missing some stuff, but okay, I'll accept that. But yeah, when we got to the fourth movie, I just was pissed. It pissed me off. I was mad. I was like, y'all screwed everything up. Ugh. So,
yeah. I'm not sure I ever got over being upset about Finnick dying. So.
No, I know. And her sister.
In either the book or the movie.
Yeah.
Like, what did you do that to me for?
Yeah, I remember reading that last one, and Finnick dies, and then her sister dies, and I'm like, what is going on? This is so not cool. And then it seemed like the ending was very, here it is, you know, kind of like, I wanted it to be like running through the field, you know, but then I was like, okay,
yeah,
it's not
it
a romance. Just let it go.
It was very somber. And I had to remind myself, you know, this is not a romance.
Exactly. I wanted it to end like a romance. Anyway.
Right, it ended on a very somber note, which,
yeah.
I mean, I understood for what the author, you know, wanted to accomplish, but I did, there was that part of me going, well, where's the really happily ever after upbeat
right.
thing?
Right, and I think that's when I realized I am a romance person. I need that happily
right.
ever after. That just kind of, it didn't depress me, but it was kind of like, I just want more.
Mm-hmm.
I just want more. So, yeah, when I knew I was a romance person.
Yes,
and
everybody knows me well. They know that I absolutely need that happy ending, or I am not going to be happy with the movie. And that's just all there is to it. So
how did you get to romance? Well, obviously you read it, but when did you decide that was what you were going to actually try put down on paper and get it going?
I think because every time I started writing something, and I think I started writing my very first, you know, seriously writing a play or a book, and, you know, as a teenager. And every time it just naturally happened that there would be a romance. There would be all this other stuff, but there was always a romance. Yeah. So I guess, you know, that's just part of my personality. You know, I'm just a romantic at heart. And,
yeah,
and I want that development between there. Yeah. Yeah. So there just has to be the romance no matter what else happens. No matter how awful the bad guy is, no matter how much backstabbing, lying, murdering, cheating, anything else, there has to be that romance and to sort of lift humanity up above it all, you know.
So you decided to start writing romance, and are you a big suspense reader as well? I mean, or is this just part of the story?
Yeah, I enjoy suspense a lot as well. And I enjoy really quirky, off-the-cuff characters, and I enjoy soap operas, you know. I mean, I like that whole continuing storyline and all the people, you know, all the characters and everybody, you know, pushing their own agenda and, you know, watching the way humanity sort of plays out. And so, and I see that in some of the shows I've, you know, enjoyed watching, you know, over my lifetime. But, you know, and I have to say, I love reading Ernest Hemingway, and I love Elmore Leonard, you know. So I loved his characters, and I can see, you know, when I'm writing how all of those things I like really sort of come into play.
Were you a fan of Justified?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. I have the entire series on DVD.
I used to watch that with my dad, and I tell you what, there were, you know, the dialogue, the writing.
Oh, so good.
Amazing.
So good.
Yes.
And that's what I loved about Elmore was, you know, he'd have these characters, you know, and they were just, you know, they were so real, but they were so interesting and off the wall and quirky. And their dialogue was amazing.
Yes.
And of course, he lived right near me. We're both in the metropolitan Detroit area, or we were. Of course, he passed away, a year or so ago.
Yeah.
But we live in the same general area.
That show just kind of revealed to me that he, you know, it actually turned me on to his writing. But it revealed to me that he could really get into the head of characters probably better than most authors, because he just made the most authentic, like you said, off the wall, bizarre characters sometimes.
Yeah. Yes. And it's so funny because, like, when you're watching Justified and you get those characters from Detroit and they're going back and forth, and of course I live in the Detroit area, so I'm going,
right,
yeah, I can see that, you know. Totally.
Yeah, that's a great show. So you're a big fan of dialogue. So tell us about the dialogue between your characters. Do you have a lot of that quippy comebacks and things like that?
Sometimes it really depends on the characters, because I do have a lot, you know, I do like characters who quip and, you know, who are smart on their feet, but I also have some characters occasionally who, and I think in this last book, Exploits, it was very funny because I have these counterfeiters, and the one guy is very intelligent and he's very fond of big words, and his underling, you know, who's basically there for the muscle, is really just not that bright. And I found that we've got our big guy in charge who's very, very egotistic, fond of his intellect, and he was constantly using these words, and then he'd be looking at the dumb guy going, which word didn't you understand now?
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's like he never figured out to just, you know, dumb down his vocabulary. Yeah, I mean, I do like that, but it just definitely depend, you know, which characters I'm writing at the time.
Yeah.
Some of them speak to me better than others. Some of them it's like pulling teeth. It's like, so I know one thing I know about you is you are not very communicative, because trying to, you know, to talk to you is tough.
Yeah. Well, that tells you a little bit about their personality then.
Yeah. Some of them are very shy. Some of them, you know, are very guarded. And some of them speak to me, you know, very unexpectedly. Kind of a funny story, when I was writing Gossip, and I have this police sergeant character whom I love, and her name is Sarge. But she was not supposed to be a she. When I planned out the whole character and I had plotted it out, she was going to be a he. And right up to the very moment as I'm writing the sentence where Sarge comes up to introduce herself, and then suddenly she's a she. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
How'd that happen? You lost something.
But, you know, she was just like, no, you've got me all wrong, you know. And she was, you know, she just spoke to me very well, very clearly. I never had a moment's difficulty getting into her head and writing her character. It was like, it was wonderful. Sometimes it's just very unexpected that way when you're writing them. It's just, then you just get to know them so well.
Do they stay with you for a long time, or do they move on after you start another project?
Well, some of them do, and because, you know, I tend to write series. I have a lot of the same characters who move from book to book. So in that respect, they do. And, you know, I have one character, Darla, who shows up in Gossip, and she's been in every book since, and she will continue to be in every book. And, you know, poor Darla, one of her, I almost feel badly for her, because one of her burning, you know, issues is that she feels like she's never the center of attention. And, you know, bless her heart, she really never is, because she is never the heroine. She's the supporting character in every book.
So she makes an appearance in all the stories. So you have some threads running through then.
Yeah. She is one of the threads that connects the new series to the old, because she jumped over from the first series to the next one. And the other tiny threads would be the hero is the brother of Jamie, our heroine in Gossip. And Jamie and her husband make a tiny appearance, you know, in a couple scenes in the book. So
I love that. When I'm into an author and reading all of their work, it always makes it, it's like fun. It's like, it's almost as good as reading the line in the book that tells you why the title is the title of the book. So those are the two moments that always make me go, ee, in a book. It's finding somebody from another book makes an appearance, or reading that line that always, it always gives me chills when I'm reading a line and it tells me why the title is that. I get the chills because I'm like, yes. So
yeah, I'm very fond of one word titles, and I think sometimes it's more obvious than others. Yeah, I really like the one word title thing. I don't know why, but I do.
It's easier to type too, so it's all good.
Well, yeah, there is that. It fits really well on the cover, you know?
Right.
Especially since you have a three name, you know, author name to stick on there.
Right. And yeah, I'm sure that makes it awful fun for you. I grew up with a very long name, and I remember having, they're like, write your whole name. I'm like, all of it? Really? Yeah, Tabitha Montgomery is a lot of syllables. And then if you add my middle name, that's four more syllables. I'm like, oh my gosh, it doesn't fit on the line. Do you have some extra space? You know, can I have an extra piece of paper? So, yeah. Not much.
That is a lot.
I understand. So tell us, just let's go over the first series. Let's just tell me the premise of the first three, the first series, The Desire Never Dies, and how it kind of progresses without spoiling it, of course, for people who haven't read it yet.
Okay, well, I'll see if I can do, like, off the top of my head, a one-sentence synopsis here. So the first book, Gratification, concerns our hero, Preston Tyler, who's a businessman, and he is having his business threatened with a hostile takeover, which forces him to go to his company's largest shareholder, who happens to be the ex-fiancée who jilted him at the altar. So then, of course, you know, we're sitting here pulling for, you know, for him to win back her heart and save his company. And then we move on to Gossip. And Gossip concerns tabloid publisher Nicholas Beck, who is Preston's one-time brother-in-law.
Oh, okay.
And after his wife is murdered, he has to clear his name and all the while falling in love with, of course, Jamie the photographer.
Duh. Throw in that conflict. That's awesome.
And then the third book, the heroine of the third book is one of the subjects of Nick's, you know, tabloid gossip magazine, Mindy mm-hmm. LePage, a one-time pop singing sensation who's been on a downward spiral and finds herself waking up in rehab. Unfortunately for her, this rehab is not quite on the level. It's more like the rehab from hell. being run by a psycho lady, and it's more like a cult. So she has to, you know, rely on the man whose heart she broke to get her out of there. So I think the thing that they all have in common in the first series is we're dealing with people who've had their hearts broken by love and need to remend them.
Okay. Yeah.
And whereas in Sex and Secrets, we have the heroine or the hero who are keeping secrets from the person they love, and that's causing problems in the romance.
Ah, okay. And so that's going to be a four-book series, you said?
Yeah. The first okay. book, Exploits, we have publicity-shy author Sunny Drysdale, who finds herself saddled with a dead body dumped in her car that she's
awesome.
Trying to get rid of while romancing the police chief.
Whoa, okay. All right. That's a difficult situation.
Yeah. She had a tough time dealing with that. She really had a hard time getting rid of that body.
Yeah, it's like, can we take your car? Yeah. I always wonder, you know, if romance authors in particular aren't complete sadists because they love to put their heroes and heroines in the worst possible situation. It's never anything it's like the worst scenario. Yeah.
I know. It's like they never just meet on Match.com and go on a few dates, realize they really like each other and hit it off and get married. And
yeah. And it's funny because real life people would say that's happily ever after, but no, you got to go through the gates of hell.
You have to go through like kidnappings and murder and dead bodies.
Right, lose a kidney, things like that. Yeah, absolutely. It's not any fun otherwise.
But there's nothing like, you know, saving each other from being kidnapped to bring a couple close together, right?
Right. I mean, true. And that's kind of one of those situations where I think that people who go through some stressful situations are actually closer and form a deeper bond. And, you know, there's a whole
psychology
to that. So it makes sense.
Yeah. I actually believe that. And I think that's perhaps one of the reasons that I like doing the romantic suspense, because I think it just makes the emotional intensity so much stronger and the pull between the characters and the bond that develops so much stronger because they've been put in, you know, these really intense situations.
Well, right. But, that's for sure. And I think that causes the emotions to come out without at some point, you know, if you feel like your life's in danger, you don't stop emotions from coming out rather than you might have in a situation where you just met this person and, oh, they're really hot and I'm kind of attracted, but I'm not, but you know, you two are about to die and it all comes
right. Right.
There's something blocking you there. Yeah. Uninhibited to say the least. So yeah, I agree. And that does make it fun to put them in those crazy situations and have them express themselves. And then later, you know, back off a little bit like, whoa, what did we, why did we, I know we were kind of in the moment
yeah,
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I find it fun. So
it is fun. It's fun. What kind of suspense do you like to read? Do you like the crime type of suspense, or is there a particular subgenre?
I don't know that it has to be a particular genre. As I said, I love Elmore Leonard. I also like James Patterson. I guess I kind of do like detective things, but I don't know necessarily not necessarily police procedurals, but, you know, just the suspense, drama, that sort of thing. Probably because I started out reading like Agatha Christie when I was a kid. So I do like the whole mystery aspect.
It just adds something to it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. But I like playing with it a little too. You know, I think the one thing I really like is to change it up a little bit here and there and, you know, so that I feel like I'm not writing the same book every time. Like for instance, Exploits was really quite humorous, and the whole plot just sort of lent itself to being humorous just because of the ridiculous situations that Sunny, the heroine, found herself in. It was like, you know, how you couldn't really do anything but laugh. It's like, you know, who else would this happen to, you know?
Yeah.
But,
and it's good that your cover actually reflects that, because you expect it to have the way that she's like, oh my gosh, that it's going to have some kind of something hilarious in it. Even though, you know, it's romance and suspense, you're going, well, okay, I'm going to get some laughs out of this one. And you picked it well. You did the cover very well on that one. So.
Oh, thank you. But yeah.
Well, and I know that you spend a lot of, people spend a lot of time concerned with our covers because, you know, even though I don't judge a book by its cover, we do. I mean.
We do. Of course we
absolutely.
Do.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, that one, that was cute.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that because I really, I actually came up with the concept for the covers myself, and, you know, and then hired a professional photographer to, you know, shoot them and make them for me. But I really liked the concept of just trying to express the emotion and the flavor of the book through the title and the look on the model's face.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I was able to find something that worked for every title for every book. So.
That's good. Well, it's good that you're a planner and that you were able to plan that all out like that, because I can imagine how you've four books and you've got four titles, you've got four storylines, and you can plan it all out. And a pantser would be like, huh? There's another book?
Well,
and I'm not dissing the Panthers, because, you know, to each his own, however your story evolves. But, yeah, I mean, sometimes playing helps.
I'm definitely a planner, but I do like to say I'm kind of a hybrid, a little bit Panther, but mostly a planner, because I knew the basic premise of each book. So that was helpful in being able to like shoot all the covers at once. I mean, can you imagine if you go back four separate times?
Oh, that's what I mean. Yes, exactly. How crazy would that be? Don't play that girl. Where is he?
So basically, you know, it was just I have the concept for each one. And when I'm writing, I will usually plot out, I mean, I know basically what's going to happen. I basically know how it's going to end. But I'll plot out a few chapters at a time. And as I'm writing them, I don't like to plot every chapter out, because as I'm writing them, I'll find that, oh, well, maybe the storyline's going just a little bit this way or a little bit that way. So I like to leave room for it to sort of flow organically, but still basically know where I'm going. So I
you give it a little help. But I think that's what most planner type people do. I don't know. I mean, I do know a few people who really do detailed outlining. But I mean, I think your characters have to speak to you as you're putting fingers to the keys, or, you know, it's a, I couldn't remember it.
it's true because you have to leave yourself open to it too, because I think otherwise, you know, the writing itself, you know, doesn't come alive the same way.
Right, exactly.
You know, and it feels more forced because, you know, if I'd done it that way, Sarge would still be a guy and boring. And I actually really like Sarge, you know. In fact, one of these days, I think Sarge and a couple other characters are going to get their own spinoff series. So,
that'll be fun.
I haven't spoke too much about it because, I've got a few books to write before I get there, but I'm thinking that eventually I might do like something called Danny's Angels. It's kind of a play on Charlie's Angels, but instead of these ladies working for Danny, Danny works for them.
Yeah. How funny. Yes, that would be fun. That would be really fun. We have about 17 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go ahead and put the phone number out if anybody wants to call in to talk to Claire Grace Walker. It is 347-633-9609. So you call in and speak to her, ask her questions. So let's see. What would you say was the first book that really had an impact on your life as becoming a writer that you were like, whoa, I really want to do this? Because I know that you were influenced by a teacher early on, but was there a book that was just stood out?
When my fourth grade teacher read us The Hobbit, that was obviously very impactful to me, and it really, you know, reinforced to me this idea that I love telling stories. That I think in terms of the first book I read that, you know, I just fell in love with the writing and really, you know, influenced the way I looked at a story and characters was probably A Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Phenomenal book. I used to say, if I could just find some way to bring Ernest back so we could have little chit chats and stuff. You know?
Well, and it's funny because I don't think he's getting a lot of attention in modern schooling. I think that I read that book in high school, but that was not one that they is on the list for my daughter anymore. They've just kind of gone, and I think it's sad. I think it's really sad because it was beautiful writing.
It is because I mean, I love incorporating new authors, but I guess it's kind of like the Girl Scout motto, make new friends, but keep the old.
Right. Yeah.
So, let's definitely, you know, bring on these other authors and these other styles, but there's no point in throwing away the old ones while we're doing that. You know, I mean, for one thing, we lose that whole style of writing and that whole sense of literature, and you have nothing to compare the other work to either. So, I think it makes more sense to, you know, keep it all. I mean, and you know what? If you need to make your students read one more book, then make your students read one more book. Of Mice and Men isn't a long book. Come on.
No, it wasn't a long book. And that wasn't one of my favorites either, but...
that one had the real bummer ending. I mean, I read that book. I was like, I don't know what to think. I love this writing. This guy is so challenging, but right now I'm really upset with him.
I'll tell you what, Steinbeck has a way with he just always depressed me. I don't know why. never had a happy ending.
He wrote about all the bad things in life, you know. He wanted to make sure you knew how badly life could suck.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for that, man. Thanks for that.
They're like, yeah, we got it. We're right there with you.
So where are you headed next with you've got the rest of the series, the Sex and Secrets series.
And I am about two-thirds of the way through the first draft on the next book, Whispers, which concerns a ghost hunter on the world's most haunted island, which is owned by a reclusive billionaire who is conducting top secret research for the Department of Defense.
Ooh.
So, needless to say, you know, their agendas are not meshing too well.
No, probably not. Okay.
And, you know, in addition to that, I very crazily started yet another book, and not even, believe it or not, not even really a romance, just a straight-out mystery. And it's going to be a shorter book, and it was all, I have to blame my friends Sarah and Julie, so if you guys are listening, it's your fault, because
oh,
they kept
fault.
Saying, you have to write a book set in Grosse Pointe, you just have to. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm afraid if I did that, everybody would be going, well, who is this character, and who is that character? And you know, I don't like basing my characters really on real people. And
right.
I'm like, oh, but that would be the fun part of it. And I'm like, yeah, I got all these other books to write. And then I swear to God, that very day, I'm sitting at home, I'm like, oh, my God, I have the best plot for this book set in Grosse Pointe. So.
All it took was
so
that
now,
scene, planted vinegar.
Yeah, so it's totally their fault, and I'm five chapters into this book, and, you know, and I have this whole series to write.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can just tell your fans they're going to have to wait because your friends messed it up.
Yeah, and I don't even really know when the Grosse Pointe book is going to come out in relation to the series. Probably somewhere in the middle of it.
Yeah. That's funny.
But I've been spending my summer sort of swapping back and forth between this book and this book and this book.
You know, you go where the creative juices flow. So I guess
right.
You got to do what you got to do. I have the problem where I start writing, I always come up with more ideas, and then I have to put them on the back burner, and they keep nagging at me. And so I have so many things that I started and went on to something else that I can't.
It's tough. And you know what? And I have a heroine who's supposed to be the heroine of the very last book of this four-book series, and she talks to me all the time. Like, literally, I have pages and pages of notes of stuff that I've written down from her because, you know, it's starting back from the time I was writing the first book, and it's just like, oh, my God, Edwin, do you know you're, like, book four? But she just starts talking.
Now, leave me alone. I wrote it down.
Yeah, right. So eventually when I get to book four, I'm going to have, like, you know, 20 pages of her inner thoughts and dialogue. You know?
Well, there you go. At least you have that one easy.
Yeah. You know, she's been trying to write the book through the start of the whole series. But, you know, just so what we know about you right now is you're impatient.
Maybe she's a Leo. She wants to be in the spotlight.
You know, it could be. It could be. But, you know, ironically, you know, she's very secretive.
Wow. That's the worst kind.
So, you know, I guess we'll just see. She's going to be a really interesting and fun character to write when I get there.
Well, we're getting down to, we're just under 10 minutes, but I want to make sure that everybody can find you online. Can you share your social media? We know your website is claragracewalker.com.
Claragracewalker.com, yes. And I'm also on Facebook. I think if you just search Clara Grace Walker, I should show right up there. It's my author page, and if you like it, please be sure to ask to get notifications so that you know when I post online, and I try and be responsive to people there. And I do know that my assistant is working on making us a private page. I also have a new website, and it's got a new members only page, so you can sign up. So when you sign up for the email list, you get to be part of the members only page, and you get to make your own profile and interact with the other members on the page. So it should be a lot of fun. And, of course, I'm also on Twitter at author Clara GW, which one of my friends suggested once meant Clara gone wild, but, but really it's
different than like a real hoot.
And, you know, and I believe I'm on Google Plus, and I have a little Pinterest page. So every once in a while I will put, you know, pictures that, you know, are remind me of settings, you know, like for my books. I think I actually, you know, my last book was set in Delray, and at the end was at Nemacolin Resort in Pennsylvania, and both of which I've spent a lot of time at. So I have, you know, some of my own photos from those. On my Pinterest board, so you can kind of get a look at some of the inspiration for my settings there, which is fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
And I understand the Bachelor also made use of Nemacolin as a setting, so hey.
Ah. Well, there you go. You know it's a nice one if they're paying for it.
Like, okay, so everybody who likes The Bachelor, when they were at Nemacolin, just know when you read my new book, Exploit, the end of it is set there, and you'll be able to, you know, say, oh, yeah, just like on The Bachelor.
There you go. There you go. Oh, don't even, my husband was just absolutely hooked on The Bachelorette this last season. Don't even ask me why. He had to watch every episode. So, anyway. And he gets on to me for watching soap operas.
Yeah. Well, I had a couple of friends of mine going, oh, yeah, that place Nemacolin you're always talking about. Yeah, The Bachelor was there. I'm like, oh, well, how interesting.
How funny.
And then
well,
it's like
I'm sure that in the
you're getting the marketing
better than
mode. It's like, okay, how can I use this?
That's funny. Well, thanks so much for being on. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
We look forward...
This is so much fun.
Yeah. We look forward to the remainder of the series and the book in the middle. It'll come out by itself.
Right, whenever that one comes out.
And make sure you, in your dedication page, you blame your friends for that one. And
oh, absolutely. Yes, it's totally your fault, ladies.
And anyway, so thanks so much again for being on, and I appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck to you and your, and I hope you enjoy your bubble up there while we're all down here drowning in the South.
Yeah, I try to remain cognizant of the fact that I am being blessed at the moment.
You are being blessed. But you know what? Rain just means you have to stay inside and read more books. So it's okay down here.
Well, you know, there is that. And I'm all in favor of reading books.
There you go. Any books. Every book. Do all the books.
Yes. And thank you so much for having me. This has really been a blast.
I'm glad you had a great time, and we'll talk again. We'll try to have you back on again, you know, when you get around to the next book, or maybe we'll even talk about the stray book, the middle book later.
Stray book. I love it. This book is henceforth known as the stray book. Yes.
The stray book. Somebody picked up a stray.
Right.
There you go. Have a great evening, Claire.
Thank you. You too, Tabitha.
Right.
Okay,
bye-bye. And thank you, everybody, for listening in tonight. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter at @HOT_Librarian_, Google+ as Tabitha Pope. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, iTunes, right here at this. You can listen to it in about, it takes about 5 minutes. It'll turn into a podcast that will be there for eternity, as far as I know. And you can find us just about everywhere in the social media universe, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. Follow us there, and we will follow you back. This is your host, Tabitha Pope, saying see you at 9 p.m. Eastern next Thursday, right here on the Librarian. I can't talk. And sweet dreams to everybody. Thanks to my gorgeous husband for watching the kiddo while I did my show. Sweet dreams. See you next week.